Welcome to For the Love of Dogs with Dennis Wolf.
Hello, hello. I have some exciting things today. We are going to be going into service dog laws and emotional support, chipmunk laws, and all kinds of things in the second half today. But I want to talk about the first half. There's some really crazy things going on. I think because, especially in the Northeast, we've had a really wet, kind of warm winter. And remember that in this weather, you have dogs going outside, they're touching things, they're licking things, they're eating things. And what can happen, unfortunately, is they ingest everything from worms to parasites, other parasites, to, well, if you know what coprophagia is, poop eating. There are also a lot more deer and other animals out because the winter isn't so severe. There's still green grass here in the Northeast. How crazy is that? But what's happening is people are stopping their heartworm pills, and normally you can get away with it, but this year you really can't. Please keep your dog on heartworm pills. In the Northeast, we really don't have to worry about heartworm. Typically, it's more in the South and in the West where it's kind of the warm winters. But look what's happening to us. We got a crazy warm winter. I don't know about global warming. It's hitting New Jersey. It's not hitting our ranch in Missouri very much because we've had a lot of snow and ice out there. But you do have to look at it as also if your dog travels. So if you've got your dog running around your yard, you better keep an eye on it. Maybe even go to your vet and get a fecal exam, like let them check to make sure that your dog doesn't have any parasites. Because the great thing about most heartworm pills and different treatments for like the Interceptor, Sentinel, even Trifexis, which I'm not a huge fan of, but all of these things will also kill roundworms, whipworms, hookworms, pinworms. Some of them do, some of them don't. Interceptor covers a little broader spectrum, but most of these, HeartGuard, all these do cover certain species of worms, which is great because if your dog ingests deer poop, bunny poop, squirrel poop, steps in something, leans in something, rubs in something, brings it in on their feet or your feet, you can get rid of that right away by having your dog on the preventative because they do cover other types of worms beside heartworms, which is really neat, and most people don't know that. So keep your dog on heartworm. If he's not on it, get to a vet, get your dog checked out, make sure he's not heartworm positive, although the chance of that is pretty minimal, obviously, if your dog is from the Northeast and you haven't done any traveling. But listen, you know, we have all kinds of crazy things. A neighbor who I know for 20-some-odd years just told me her little French bulldog, little Leo, he's so cute, that Leo has canine coronavirus. Now, it's not the same as in humans, but that's something we normally haven't even been vaccinating against because it's not something that's really prevalent. But the same way that the warm winter is creating havoc with, you know, the different kind of parasites and worms and all, we also may wind up seeing other bacteria, protozoal, fungal infections starting to be more prevalent. So if you take your dog to the dog park, which I'm not a huge fan of, but if you take your dog to the dog park, make sure you kind of rub him down, use some kind of a wipe on his feet or rinse his feet off. If he is playing with other things that other dogs have played with, just remember, you can get all kinds of things from playing with toys. Remember, those of you who have kids, little kids, they go to school, they come home with lice, they come home with ringworm, they come home with all kinds of parasites, they come home with germs, snotty noses, conjunctivitis, right? They come back with things. So same thing can happen to your dog. Please keep an eye on your dog. I think it's really a great idea in this kind of environment where we are right now for you to see your veterinarian maybe twice a year instead of once a year for a checkup. You know, let them check at least the fecal, make sure the dog doesn't have any infections. We've also seen tons of urinary tract bladder infections also. So, again, that's because it's a very warm winter. It's great when you go to pay your heating bill. It's not so great when you realize how many bugs we're going to have next year. So maybe we'll get a real killer February for 4 or 5 weeks at least to start blanketing and killing some of the parasites that are out there. So there's my tirade for that for a whopping 5 minutes. Now we're going to go on to the rest of the show. So we've had a lot of people recently who have had to give dogs away for aggression issues. Now, when I'm a behaviorist, as you all know, and I love doing what I do, but it really breaks my heart when rescue groups don't stand behind the puppies or dogs that they bring up. Most of the time, not all the time, but most of the time, puppies and dogs come up. It could cost a couple hundred dollars to transport them, give them shots, spay, neuter. It's usually $200 to $300. And if they charge an adoption fee, it's usually around $200 to $300, especially up here in the Northeast. But right now, we've been seeing a lot of very unscrupulous people who are charging $800, $1,000, $2,000 for rescue fees for that. And a lot of times what they're doing is just going to shelters or rescues or looking on Craigslist or other social media. They're grabbing puppies and dogs, and they're saying they're rescue dogs. It might have been from a very lovely home where somebody's dog got pregnant because they didn't spay her or they didn't neuter the neighbor's shepherd mix. But we really want to look at it as treat yourself and treat the dog as it's a marriage. Because remember, if that dog has problems and if you're dealing with a rescue or shelter that doesn't stand behind the animals, of course you don't know what's wrong with them. They don't either very often. But your place, wherever you deal with, should be able to give you a guarantee that, hey, if anything happens, you're going to have what we call first right of refusal. We get to take the dog back or help find a home for it. But recently I've been finding just an awful lot of really dogs just with big behavioral issues. And it may be because, as you know, I go into the Scientific Foundation, and it's funny, my friend Temple Grandin called me today. We're going to be getting together when she comes out to Jersey in May. And we had a nice little chat about, you know, different things that happen with dogs and different types of issues and where they come from. So remember when the weather, remember weather is day-to-day, climate is overall. If our weather for the winter is kind of mild and you guys are, you know, adopting dogs that are from the south, there's a higher chance, even if they're from around here, there's a higher chance they're going to wind up with parasites and different things, coccidia, giardia, ehrlichiosis, some of the tick-borne diseases, Lyme, anaplasmosis, because we've had such a mild, mild winter. Now, obviously, the best thing in the world is to rescue. If you do want a purebred dog, and those of you who are looking for a low-shedding dog, consider looking at standard poodles, Havanese, Maltese, Yorkshire Terrier, some of the dogs, even Petit Brussels Griffon Vendéen, and now the Grand Basset Griffon Vendéen, that some of these dogs actually are very low shedding, schnauzers and all. So don't go rushing to go to a puppy mill or somebody who's breeding mixed breed dogs to make money. And I know right here I'm going to have a bunch of people up in arms screaming, but oh well. I say it as I see it, but don't go and go to a pet store. Pet stores do not buy dogs from good breeders like me. If I would ever, in my wildest dreams, think of selling a dog to somebody I had never met or selling a puppy and shipping it somewhere, I mean, first of all, you couldn't do it with my breed club, my parent breed club. You're not even allowed to do that and be in the club. That the point is that when somebody sells a dog to a puppy store, pet store, and they're selling puppies, I don't care if you're paying $500 because they say, oh, the dog, you know, nobody wants them. We're going to put them to sleep. We're going to just, they're not going to put to sleep a dog because they can't sell it. They'll dump it in a shelter. They're not that horrible. But the problem is you go and buy that dog and it fills up the next day, the next week with another one. And the mother and father of that puppy that you bought, yeah, you may think you're saving that dog. You're really damning and condemning hundreds of other dogs who are going to take that spot. Because if they sell that puppy, even if it's at a loss, they're going to fill up that cage again. The longer your puppy is in that cage, and it sounds terrible, but think about it. The longer your puppy is costing them money, the less chances that they're going to be making a profit. Well, guess what? These puppy mills and pet stores, they're just in it for the profit. So if they don't make money, they go out of business. Please help us. Please. Even if it's a quote-unquote purebred dog, you don't know. All you have is a piece of paper. And, you know, the trick is they don't even have American Kennel Club papers because you have to be a purebred registered. And they check, you know, we do all DNA and everything on them now. So we know that they're purebred and we know who their parents and their descendants and their ancestors are. So if they give you, oh, it's American Union of Kennels, that is not, or Continental Kennel Club, all these, that is not a legitimate registry. I can say, oh, I have a purebred Labrador Retriever, and that it's UKC or AKC or QKC or RKC registered, or CKC, Canadian Kennel Club registered, and that may be a purebred. It doesn't mean it's a good one. Doesn't mean it's one that's got any of the qualities you need. It doesn't mean that the dog doesn't have 10 different congenital issues and health issues and temperament issues and physical issues. It just means that it's that type of a dog. So it's kind of like getting a lemon law, like a clunker in a car. So you take that dog that you got supposedly papers on that we don't even know where the papers came from, and we breed it to another dog that we have no idea, even if it's a quote-unquote purebred dog. As you know, years ago, I remember as a kid, it was like terrible. If you bought, we had Scottish Terriers, and they were, one was a son of the 1967 Westminster winner. The other one was, I think, 1970 or thereabouts. I had the son of that Westminster winner. Those dogs, if these great breeders couldn't sell the puppies to show homes, they would deal with neighborhood stores that cared about making, you know, a good match for a family, and they made a couple of bucks along the way. But that's not what it is now. These designer disasters are having all kinds of problems. And you know what's funny? If you say, well, I wanted a rescue, but, you know, I need something that's low shedding. Hey, I get it. But you can go to, if you want a poodle mix, you can go to a doodle, poodle, cadoodle thing mix. And there's, if you say, I want that kind of dog, you can get one that you can rescue because somebody else got it and they didn't want it because they bought it for their kids for Christmas and now it's already by Valentine's Day, nobody wants it anymore. Or maybe the dog had physical issues or health issues or temperament issues, which a lot of them have. But you're talking about the puppy that you get at that pet store is basically garbage. I love the puppies, but I mean, if I have one more person say, oh, but they were going to put it to sleep. No, they're not. These people are in it for money. You really think they're going to go euthanize a dog? Guess what? It costs a couple hundred dollars to euthanize a dog. They're not going to spend money to euthanize a dog because nobody's buying it. But what does happen is it has that the mother and the father of that puppy are in that puppy mill, whether it's clean or dirty or not. They breed every heat cycle. So dogs go into heat, females typically about every 6 months. Some go a little more often, some go a little less often. But pretty much twice a year, that person can breed and get 4 to 12 puppies, depending on what breed it is, and they or combination of breeds. And they say, oh, this is a mini golden doodle. Well, I saw a lady, she's really super nice. She got a golden poodle mix. And, of course, you know, she wanted something smaller. It was like 90 pounds. Well, she said, oh, I don't want another one that size. I'm going to get a mini golden doodle. And if she's listening, she'll know because she told me and she felt like an idiot when she was telling me. said, I got a mini one. Well, guess what the mini one was? 110 pounds. This was with a toy poodle, supposedly father, and a golden poodle mix mother. And this dog came out 110 pounds, and it was like a year old, so it's still growing. So the reason you don't know is the same as if you look at genetics in your family. You might be a guy who's 6'5". Your wife might be 5'3". And your one son might be 5'7", adult. Your one daughter could be 6'2". And somebody could be 6'7". Or 4'7". The problem is that genetics don't always give us what we want. It's with racehorses or any kind of animals, any kind of humans. If we want, and we say, oh, look at that beautiful, like Merlin, who was the most magnificent horse ever on the planet, people would come to me all the time and they'd say, oh, I want a horse that looks just like him. That's what I want to breed to him. And I'd look at their mare, the female horse is called a mare. If they're over 3 years old, under three, they're called fillies. That people would come to me with their mares and say, I want a horse just like Merlin. And I'd look at their mare and I'd say, my stallion is not going to complement your mare, which really meant, dear God, I don't think you should ever breed what you're thinking of breeding, because I don't care what my horse, my stallion can fix. The chances are that you're going to get some combination of the parents, and you can go higher or lower. So if you breed, let's say, a dog, a poodle, to, let's say, a German Shepherd, and you have a Shepherd Doodle, I'm sure somebody's created one of those things, and you say, oh, well, guess what? German Shepherds are highly allergic dogs. Well, for me and for a lot of people, poodles are not. Well, you can have one that sheds a lot and isn't hypoallergenic, which is kind of a misnomer. You could also have one who is, quote-unquote, hypoallergenic. And then you can have one that's super dominant and aggressive. You could have one that's really sweet in the same litter, because you don't have, it's not what we call homogeneous. It's heterogeneous. In other words, because you breed two things together, it's called incomplete dominance. So you can have any combination of anything all the way up and down the spectrum. It doesn't mean if you breed a black dog and a yellow dog, like with Labrador Retrievers, right? There's three colors. There's actually four because they added in some Weimaraner, which they say that they didn't, but of course they did. So if you have a black lab and you breed it to a yellow lab, you can get black, chocolate, or yellow. Did you know that? So if you breed black to yellow, you could have all chocolate. You could have 1-1-1. You can have 2-2-2. You could have 6-0-0. You can have 0-4-8. You could have all kinds of combinations. So that's where the problem is. Same thing happens if you want, and it's called single trait breeding. When you start breeding dogs, cats, chipmunks, whatever things you want to breed, and you start breeding crosses, what you're doing is you're diluting it and you are getting nothing. You're getting a combination. So those of you who have had, you know, you say, oh, I had the best, let's say, German Shepherd in the world when I was a kid. But your German Shepherd was the son of a Westminster or Grand Champion show dog, because those were the only people who used to breed 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago. So as a kid, you had a dog that grew up in a home with a champion breeder who cared about the standards of the breed. So even though your dog might not have been the perfect, perfect specimen, it was pretty darn close. They kept the most perfect, and they might have sold a pet, even though it was could have finished a championship. It wasn't quite as good as the others, and that's why you got it. But that's not what's happening nowadays. People are going to rescues, and some rescues are not spaying and neutering, or people are going to a bad breeder, like some of the Amish are very good. Some of them are not so good. And you can go and get a poorly bred, let's say, poodle and a poorly bred golden retriever, and you can breed them. You think you're going to get Lassie out of it? You think you're going to get a fantastic dog? Well, you could. You got about a 25% chance of having the best dog in the world, a 50% chance, if you go through those of you who know Gregor Mendel, the Punnett Square, you get a 25% chance of getting a great one, about 50% chance of getting a so-so one, could have problems, could not, you don't know, and then a 25% chance of getting my client's dogs, because nobody ever calls me and says, Janice, I got the best puppy in the world. Can you come visit? Well, you know what? That is happening because people who shouldn't be breeding animals are breeding and don't care. Because if you don't buy that, let's say, that doggy in the window, some other owl is going to do it. So don't think you're rescuing them. If you want a rescue, call a rescue. There's some wonderful rescues. And as much as there might be rescue people who are a little off the deep end, as many of them are, they care typically. They care about the dogs. They're maybe not going to be able to stand behind them, but neither is your puppy mill dog at the pet store because they've gone out of business by the time you sue them. And guess what? They don't tell you all the issues because they don't care, nor do they know. So it's really important for everybody, if you are going to get another dog, go on Pet Finder, one of the websites that has dogs for up for rescue. Try to find, because you can even find puppies sometimes. And they're cute and wonderful and everything. The other great thing you can do, I get this happening all the time. People call me and they say, oh, Janice, I know you train these incredible service dogs. You have your Rhodesian Ridgebacks, and they're so gorgeous, and they win all these dog shows, and they're service dogs, and they do cancer and disease detection, and, you know, they're famous, and I want one of your dogs. Well, maybe their lifestyle isn't going to be good for one of my dogs. But what I will try to do is find a rescue dog. If they say, well, no, I don't really want a show, well, then you don't need one of my dogs. If you want a pet, and if I get a dog who's a pet that, you know, that maybe I've got a larger litter and I need to, you know, I only have maybe four or five show homes, then yes, you can have one of those. But if you get that dog and you're not showing it and I don't feel it's that perfect quality of everything, not just color, not just size, not just shape, but everything, it's going to go out on a spay-neuter contract. You will not breed a dog that is not perfect and that does not have the right everything. Even if it does, you don't need to be breeding, because that's the problem. People don't have a conscience. Oh, I have a purebred Ridgeback, which doesn't usually happen with my breed. I have a purebred lab. Oh, good, I have a purebred lab. Let's breed them. Are you kidding? You don't genetic test them. You don't check hips, elbows, thyroid, von Willebrand, heart. I mean, there's cardiac, bear and surf with the eyes and all. So if you're not going to do your due diligence and you're not going to be going out there and making sure that your dog is going to be a good parent genetically and passing good traits through, your dog might be the best dog in the world. But maybe he's got genetic issues. And think about even with people. Think about autism. Think about cancers, seizures. Think about, you know, congenital issues, crazy things that happen. The shape of your nose, the shape of your feet. Well, guess what? Your crummy health, your crooked teeth, your bad digestive tract, that all comes through. And it comes through with dogs, too. Comes through with horses. But horse people are smart enough not to do that. Because if you make a mistake with horses, you got a 25 to 30 year long time that you got to pay $300 to $2,000 a month for board, and $300 is if you're doing it yourself in your backyard and in somewhere in West Virginia where you grow your own hay. You don't make those mistakes, and it's only one, and it takes 11 months for gestation for a horse. It only takes 63 days, which is 9 weeks, for gestation for a dog. So if you make mistakes, you get 8 or 10 of them, you sell them to some schmuck who's unsuspecting and just wants a cute little puppy, and there we go. So I'm on my tirade, I'm on my soapbox, and I'm hoping that everybody listens and you heed what I'm saying. Take care of your animals. Don't give up on your animals. If you have a behavioral issue Everybody knows I am so available for anything and everything that anybody needs. You can reach out to me at 855-4, the letter K, the number 9, PROS, P-R-O-S, 1-855-4-K-9-PROS. And you can also email us at info@unitedk9pros.com or unitedk9pros@gmail.com. We have the websites and we have the email addresses for you. You can always call in. You can ask any questions, but the best is to do is to email me and I'd be happy to answer it. If you need help with your dog, you can call or email. Remember the 855-4-K-9-PROS. You can look us up on the internet. And if you have a problem with your dog, also the greatest book probably written for people to just like a how-to guide is Happens, S-H-H-H, Happens, Dog Behavior 101. You can get on Amazon for $9.99. And you can have years, 35, 40 years of experience that's going to help you to teach your dog in a loving and gentle way without shock collars, without crazy squirt bottles and banging and clanging and choker chains and prong collars and yanking and pulling and throwing things, throwing a chain at a dog. That's going to inspire confidence and instill a lot of confidence in a fearful dog. But don't do it if it doesn't feel right. Do it because you feel like you would do the same thing with your five-year-old child. You love your child. You love your dog. Don't start subjecting your fearful dog or your dog with behavioral issues to pain, to stupidity. Just make sense. Make sense. So Happens, S-H-H-H, Happens, Dog Behavior 101 on Amazon, and you will learn a lot. And it's great also to follow the show because I do reference things a lot. And all the proceeds get donated to Merlin's Kids. We get a few dollars out of each one. But it's a really great book, and it will help you. And it will help you to help your dog. So we're going to take a quick break, and we'll come back with the second segment of the show, which, as you know, is from shelter dog to service dog. And we're going to talk about some service dog regulations and emotional support chicken regulations in a few minutes. So please come back. Do not go away. And welcome to From Shelter Dog to Service Dog with the ever animated Janice Wolf. Why am I so hyper today? Why am I so wired and passionate today? Well, like my engineer says, passionate, informative, and just I want to help you. I want you to learn things. I want you to learn it the right way. You see on the internet, you see on all these social media platforms, people who claim, oh, take our course. It's only $30. We'll make you a certified dog trainer. Oh, come on. Seriously? Seriously. You got to just be smart for yourself. Don't be stupid. Don't be gullible. Don't be naive. Because the problem is everybody now, everybody's a dog trainer. You don't have to have any experience. You just get business cards printed up. I'm a dog trainer, or I'm a service dog trainer, or I'm a behaviorist. No, you're not. A behaviorist doesn't use shock collars, prong collars, choker chains, cookies, throwing things, squirting things. Behavior is in your brain. So there are some great obedience trainers. Ryan is awesome. He's at our Petco. I love him. I refer tons of people to him. I don't mind obedience. I've been working with this cute little Havanese puppy at my gorgeous new facility in here in New Jersey. And he's a great little puppy. He's from a good show breeder. He was from a large breeder, but he's a great puppy. He's a puppy. He tries. He figures things out. But I've also worked with a lot of rescue puppies and, you know, 35,000 plus dogs with behavioral issues. I'm not 20, you know, I'm not 30. I've got so many years, which I hate to say because then it calls attention to the fact that I have so many years that I've been doing this. But you have to think of it as when we start getting into certain realms, people, please have a darn conscience. Don't start telling people in need, people with disabilities, oh, I can train service dog. Training a dog to sit and lie down in your living room is not making it a service dog. A service dog is task trained. A service dog can be anywhere in any environment. An airplane can take off. I remember I was in California, in San Diego, coming back with Clarence after we placed Lila with the incredible Abby. And, you know, Clarence and I were literally in the tarmac. They dropped the plane. I mean, guess there were no gates open for us. And they dumped us in the middle of the tarmac. And we had to take this crazy bus to get back with everybody on the plane got on one bus. And when I tell you it was tight, it was unbelievable. Well, I stuck Clarence underneath where the luggage was going, and people didn't see him, and they just kept smashing luggage. He was just stuck behind there. And they took their luggage out. I pulled him out, and people were like, oh, my God, there was a dog behind there? Yeah, he was there. He was just kind of standing there waiting for everything to happen. He went through heck. And all of our dogs have to pass very strict, very, very difficult tests because we want to make sure that those dogs are not going to be reacting. They're not going to have some two-year-old kid running up and grabbing them by the eyeball or by the underneath the private parts, which we've definitely had happen to some of our dogs. We have to make sure that we child-proof and idiot-proof our dogs because we can't dog-proof children and idiots. Now, and I'm not talking about if you pet the dog or you ask questions because that's kind of a normal thing. But seriously, what we've been having the last couple of days with what's going on with service dogs and emotional support chickens and tarantulas is really crazy. So I was just on Fox with a lovely guy named Gary Baumgartner. He interviewed me about what was going on right now with the laws, with the legislation that they're thinking of. And he said, what really are you looking at as the founder and executive director of Merlin's Kids, having been doing this for 30 years and being an authority in the field? What do you feel about that? Aren't you so happy that there's going to finally be regulations? And I said, well, yes and no. For emotional support animals, I don't care if you want to bring a dog on. But you know what? Your dog has to pass public access exposure. Your dog cannot be a danger to itself or to others. My friend Temple Grandin and I talked about this ad nauseum. We don't care what breed you have. We don't care what your dog does or doesn't do to help you. If you fake having a service dog, I honestly don't care. If you claim to have seizures but you don't, or if you claim to have a medical condition and you don't, you got to deal with that with your maker. You know, I don't care about that. I don't need to know your medical history. But when your ill-trained mutt comes over and attacks my dog in an airport or on an airplane, and I've had that happen multiple times. Savannah's been nailed twice. Wyatt's been nailed more times than I can even count. And your dog starts impacting mine, or your dog rips the face off of a man on Southwest Airlines, or bites a little girl in the face on Delta, or whatever, all these things that we've heard. I have a problem with that, because now that dog is not only not safe, but that dog is representing my dogs. That dog is representing all the dogs, over 1,000 dogs that I have trained in my career, service dogs, phenomenally trained, perfectly trained and behaved dogs. So if my service dog is minding its own business and your ill-behaved mutt lunges at mine, and I had a veteran when I was in St. Louis in the airport, I had another veteran that happened. I think that was in Kansas City another time. I had one in California, and I've certainly had several at Newark Airport. When your dog goes after mine, and your dog has a fake service vest, guess what happens? People don't think that, oh, look, your dog is a fake service dog. They know it is. But now they look at my dog who just got attacked and say, wow, your dog is so well behaved. Well, obviously that other one is a fake. Yours is real. But mine are tough enough and I know what to do. And our people are trained for literally 125 hours plus a very long detailed course that we make them undergo for 12 weeks on top of that, plus a lifetime of help and a year post-placement. So we really teach everybody what to do. But let's just say for a minute, you went to an agency, and there's some really bad agencies out there, and there's a few really good ones. Let's say you went to a bad agency, and you just paid $60,000 for a supposed dialed medical alert dog. And the dog is not well-behaved. The dog doesn't do a job, but it was sold to you as a diabetic alert dog. So are you allowed on a plane? Not unless your dog can pass, because I don't care who claims to have trained it. I don't care if, as my husband used to say, Joe Juganutz, who claims he's a dog trainer and he's a service dog trainer. We shouldn't be worrying about that. And we also should not be discriminating against people who have disabilities who can train their own dog. I don't care who trains the dog. That's irrelevant. It's passing a standard test that there should be no charge for. We need to have a national ID or at least a state ID whereby people can go, people who have a legitimate dog or think they have a legitimate dog, that dog goes, and not CGC TDI, because too many of those, I have friends who are CGC TDI evaluators. They feel bad for somebody sometimes and they just pass them anyway. They paid their $200 for the classes and I feel bad. So you can't have that. You have to have people who are honest. The dogs can't just be tested in the same, well, either without dogs or in the same group of dogs, because dogs, even dog aggressive dogs, will get used to the dogs in their own group and they won't react. But that's who you're tested with. Then you go into the airport and all of a sudden the dog sees a dog it doesn't know and now it becomes aggressive, or it becomes, you know, growly, it becomes jumpy. We can't have that. I don't want people who can truly train their own dog, self-trained dogs, I don't want them to be discriminated against. And I also don't want people who spend $60,000 on some bogus dog that they thought was good, but the agency is going out of business or gives them an eight-week-old puppy and two lessons or three lessons during the life of the puppy. And you say, oh, yeah, that's your service dog. If people were such great dog trainers, there wouldn't be 3.5 million dogs relinquished to shelters and rescues every year, right? The shelters would be empty if people were such good dog trainers, or if there were good dog trainers at all. That's what the problem is. So what I want to do, and I would love for everybody here to join me and go on to Merlin's Kids. You can reach out to us at the number that I told you earlier, the 855, the number 4, the letter K, the number 9, and then the word PROS, P-R-O-S. Or you can contact us at United, the letter K, the number 9, PROS, @gmail.com. We will answer you. We are joining, and we have our Merlin's Kids, which we do, and we always look for people to help us. If you don't know what you're doing with dogs, but you want to learn, we have classes that we can teach you. We can help you. You can help us. But if we have a national, a federal ID or a state ID for service dogs, That's what I want. So then if we have that idea, it then becomes illegal, the same as counterfeiting money and the same as falsifying a driver's license. Now those people who are printing up those fake IDs that you see all over the internet, oh, fly your dog for free. We have a counselor who lost their license already 16 times for bogus crap. We have that person's going to give you a letter. Well, did you ever check the letter to see who the letter is from, to see if that person is even a doctor that you're talking to? Come on. People can't be that stupid. Maybe they're that gullible. I don't know. But I want there to be a state or federal ID so that all these fake IDs and fake vests that are out there will be illegal because there's a real one. And then if they counterfeit or create a fake ID that is not what the government is giving out, then they will go to jail, which, by the way, is not the worst thing for evil people who are taking advantage or who are crazy to be in jail. Get them away from us. Remember the leper colonies, not leopard. Some of you older people will know what I'm talking about. If you're like 40 or over, you'll kind of understand the grown-up world. So if you have leprosy, you went to a leper colony. You didn't go out and give it to everybody else. It's what's going on now. We had SARS. We have MERS. We have this now human coronavirus coming out of China. We have to protect people. And we have to sometimes protect people from themselves. So if we have a state or federal ID, imagine that you go, or we have somebody traveling. We have over 100 people just in my companies who are able to evaluate dogs. It's not a three-second evaluation. It's going to be a couple of hours. We're going to bring your dog with a bunch of other dogs. We're going to see how they are. We're going to give you a lesson, teach you what to do, and see how your dog reacts. And we will tell you your dog is well-behaved. Your dog can pass public access. You are approved. You did not pass. Your dog is aggressive. Your dog is fearful. Please leave your dog at home. And then we're not charging anybody. But sometimes some of the people who are really not wanting a state or federal ID are people who have self-trained or who have gotten a dog from an agency and the dog just isn't good. I remember I was up in Syracuse, New York at a restaurant and there was a doodle thing that came in and Savannah, my Ridgeback Savannah, was under the table sleeping, resting, taking care of me. And this dog came in and it smelled Savannah and it started literally trying to get to her to attack her. And she was just under the table. I didn't have her leash or anything. She was just down where she was supposed to be at my feet. The woman kept trying to keep the dog under control. And finally, she started to leave. And I went up to her and I said, you know, don't leave. Don't leave. I can help you. I'm a behaviorist. I do this for a living. What happened? Are you trying to train your own dog? And she said, no. I actually paid, I think it was $22,000. From this agency. And I said, well, you need to call the agency. Well, they went out of business. Well, of course they went out of business because they didn't train it. It was supposed to be a diabetic alert dog for her daughter. And I said, well, where's your daughter? Well, my daughter's in school. So why isn't the dog with her? Because the first day the dog went and the first 3 days, because they gave them a few days, the dog was so out of control and so disruptive, jumping on everyone, running all over, barking and out of control, that the dog, a supposed service dog, got kicked out of school. So now the woman, who lovely, lovely lady, she's trying to make some sense of it all and trying to take this dog out for public access to get it friendly. But guess what? That dog is defective. I was going to help her, and I thought better. And I said, you know what? Why am I going to try to help this dog who is going to have problems? Because the 8-year-old girl with diabetes isn't going to be able to handle this dog, even if it does work. And she said the dog didn't even alert for diabetes. So she spent $22,000, and the restaurant we were in also had donated to her fund and had run a fundraiser. And that's why they were allowing the dog in the restaurant, even though it was so ill-behaved. But I tried to help the lady, and she was very grateful. But she said, you know, she says, it's just very embarrassing. The dog is now 4 years old, and it's still just out of control. And she said, I got ripped off, but I feel really bad because everybody had helped, you know, us to get this dog. And that's the problem with all these agencies popping up. You want to see a lot of history. There are some great agencies out there. There are some bad ones. Everybody thinks they're a dog trainer. Everybody thinks they're a behaviorist. Everybody trains service dogs. Please, buyer beware, caveat emptor, right? You learned that if you've ever learned anything in Greek or Latin. We have Greek words. We have Latin words, caveat emptor, which is Latin for buyer beware. You just want to make sure that what you're buying or what is purported to be something you're buying or any training program, you want to make sure that it comes from somebody who actually knows what they're doing, because free or cheap is not necessarily a good thing. So if you want to rescue a puppy, you want to rescue a dog, and you want to train it as a service dog, reach out to us. We subsidize a lot of people. We do train service dogs for special needs kids, for veterans. We've been doing it for 30 plus years, and we are great at it. And I'm not gonna be humble on this. We do a phenomenal job on these dogs, but we spend somewhere between 1,000 and 2,000, typically 1,500 to 2,000 hours on these dogs training them. You know how much time that is? A year and a half to 2 years. It's a long time. And do we have some dogs who can't make it? We have some that don't. We work with them, and if they're great at one thing, let's say mobility, and they're not great at something else, we'll kind of steer them to where we know these dogs need to go so that they're in the right environment. They're with the right family. They're either with a child or they're with a veteran, depending on their temperament, where the people live and all that. And there has to be a huge bond. So you can't just go buy a puppy and say, oh, I'm going to train it to be a service dog. What do you do? It's kind of like meeting your spouse or meeting your worst enemy when you're babies. And you got along fine then. But as you got older and as you continued growing and learning, you kind of grew apart. Think of how many, maybe your best friend in grammar school or one of your friends from when you were a kid, and you could never be married to that person. They changed and you didn't change the same way. Think about siblings. If you have a brother or sister, could you be married to somebody who is just like your brother or sister? Possibly not. Because let's face it, we don't always love who we're related to. And it's that same thing. So join me in trying to help people who have disabilities in basically taking out the emotional support blanket of animals. I have no problem if you want to bring your emotional support dog on a plane. Totally fine. Just make sure that your dog is well-behaved and passes public access tests. If your dog can't behave nicely, like Temple always says, if your dog can't play nicely with others in the sandbox, then you need to leave your dog at home. You don't want to start creating an environment, which we have now, which I think it was 172,000 dogs flew. I believe it was on Southwest, and it was like almost 90,000 on Delta, and it was something even more than that on United. It's crazy. Why do we need to bring our dogs on the plane? If you need to travel, guess what? If your dog is well-behaved, And your dog can pass the test, so just basically that it can be social and it's not going to be running up and down, peeing and pooping and barking the whole time or growling or lunging or biting somebody, I'd love to have your dog sitting next to us because my dog isn't going to react to your dog. But when your dog is on a plane, how do you really, I mean, let's think about this for a second. If you fake it and you go into a restaurant or into a store, and your dog misbehaves, your dog starts growling or barking or being aggressive in another way, or it starts defecating and urinating all over the restaurant, you can be kicked out, right? Even if it's claim to be a service dog. It still has to behave. Just the fact that it's a service dog doesn't mean that it's automatically immune and exempt. They have to behave too, but legitimate ones do behave. So I can kick you out of the restaurant, I can kick you out of the store, but how do I get you and your aggressive, let's call it a husky mix or shepherd mix or whatever that dog was that bit the little girl on the plane that was all over the place? How do I get rid of you and your dog, and how do I have you take the dog off of a plane at 37,000 feet? That's a problem, and that's why dogs should not be flying. If you need your dog to fly or to go somewhere, there's Pet Air, there are several airlines, and I'm not a fan of cargo either. I wish that people would not have ruined it, because it's fine for people to bring an emotional support dog. I have no problem with that. But don't fake it just so you don't have to pay the $125 fee. And please don't bring your dog that's aggressive or ill-behaved on the plane or filthy, because that's the other thing. You see people I've seen fake service dogs and even a real one, a German Shepherd once, that was filthy, that smelled like a wet chicken. It was disgusting. And, you know, you just got to look at it as, yes, disabled people have rights and should have rights. If we need to fly with a service dog that is well-behaved, well-trained, and performs a task, then we should be permitted, and all people should be permitted who have a disability that can be mitigated, and I'll explain that in a moment. If you want to bring an emotional support dog and your dog is well-behaved and sits in your lap or sits on the floor and is good, I don't have a problem with it, and I think most people wouldn't. Where I have a problem with it is when you start buying a fake ID or getting a fake letter or getting, convincing or goading your therapist and into giving you a letter to say that you need to have the dog. Well, what do you do with the dog the rest of the time? You only flying with it? If you're afraid of flying, like the one lady who was sitting next to me during one flight with Savannah, and she said, oh, I would love to have my dog here. I've taken my dog, my emotional support dog, but she's getting kind of old. And I said, oh, I'm sorry. Do you have, is there something that, your dog can help you with that it's trained to do? And she said, oh, no, sometimes I think the plane is going to crash. And I just shot her a look and I said, oh, my goodness, that's terrible. But if I thought the plane was going to crash, I wouldn't bring my dog on the plane because I don't want my dog to die. And if I thought the plane was going to crash, I probably would have driven. So come on, people. I mean, I know my mother was like 80 something before she got on a plane the first time. And, she was afraid of planes. She got on a plane and it went a very long way into another continent. So, I get it. I get it. But let me explain to you, emotional support is not a law. Emotional support animals is FHA, which is the Fair Housing Act, and ACA, Air Carrier Act. So the issue is you are not protected if you have a quote-unquote emotional support dog or if you claim to have a service dog. If you do not have a disability that dog is mitigating or lessening, for those of you who didn't take my SAT courses, if that dog can mitigate a disability, can assist you with a disability, the dog is considered an assistive device, just as a cane or a walker or a tablet that you need to have with a reader, all of those things, a wheelchair or anything that helps you, crutches or whatever, a brace to mitigate a disability. Where we get into trouble is when people start looking at things and they say, well, why can't I have my dog on the plane? But why do you want your dog on the plane? Why do you want to put your dog through that? And guess what? It's not only dogs who are under the plane who have issues. It is not good for certain breeds to even fly. It takes a lot out of them. It's a very dry environment. They can pick up germs, diseases, allergies. And they're crumpled up into a tiny little place. And we know because we are too on planes, they start putting more seats and less space. Why would you want to do that to your dog? That's horrible. So If you want to take your dog, just make sure your dog is well behaved. If you have a disability, or let's say you say, well, I want to have a service dog because now I don't think we can have emotional support dogs. I'm going to lie and say it's a service dog. You can't ask me what's wrong with me. True, but there are two questions that any business or person allowing or not allowing you to go into a location can ask you. Is this a service dog required because of a disability? Yes or no? If so, if you say yes, then what tasks is the dog trained to perform? Not because I feel better, but it has to be task trained. I'm sorry, we have so much more to talk about. And I hope everybody's going to read my book, Happens, SHHH, Happens, Dog Behavior 101 on Amazon, and call us at United Canine Pros and Merlin's Kids, because we would definitely love to help you. Well, it's Friday night. And I'm going to go have my dinner, and I hope everybody out there has a wonderful, healthy, happy weekend. Love you all. Have a great holiday coming up with Valentine's Day in another couple of weeks, and start getting ready for the spring.